You're listening to UCF Knights Talk, a UCF Knights podcast with the Orlando Sentinel's Shannon Green. Get the latest on the hottest topics involving the Knights from our unique perspective. And now, on with the show.
And welcome back to another edition of UCF Knights Sports Talk podcast brought to you by Orlando Sentinel. My name is Brant Parsons with Matt Michelle filling in for Shannon Green still and dry. Back from Cincinnati, you're dry and you haven't been out in any more monsoons or rain since then, but you've been out around UCF this week. You've been to their practice. You've seen the reaction coming from that game. And UCF in that game against Cincinnati, as we talked about in the last podcast, as good an offensive performance as they can have in the defense, not so much, but it didn't matter in this game because the offense did so much to carry them. East Carolina comes in on Saturday night. This is a 1-5 East Carolina team, 1-2 in the American. Was it 35 points, I think you said?
35 points was the last I saw.
UCF favored by five touchdowns in this game. And Matt, I think UCF fans have the same concern that I'm going to bring up here, and that is the defense has been so good through all the games this year leading up to last week for UCF. And as much as we've spent talking about Mackenzie Milton, and he deserves it, he's number two in the country in passing efficiency, number 10 in total offense. The scoring offense is number one in the country in the FBS for UCF. But the defense has been something that has stood out to us as a strength on this team. And is there a concern that defense wasn't that strength against Cincinnati? And can we expect them to bounce back at home against East Carolina?
Well, I don't know if there might have been a little bit of concern. I think, you know, talking with some of the coaching staff this week, there was an indication that maybe they felt like some of the players didn't take it as seriously, you know, weren't in the film rooms, as many were in the film rooms as they'd seen in the past. Listen, the hardest thing this team is going to face as it continues to win is going to be expectations. It's going to be the attention. I mean, we're seeing it week in and week out. Especially now that they're ranked up to number 22. As they climb the rankings, you're going to see this team get a lot more national attention. And as much as coaches will say things like, hey, we don't want to pay attention to the media, we don't want to pay attention to the TV, it's hard. If I'm an 18, 19-year-old kid, you've got a smartphone in your hand, you've got people texting you, telling you how good you are, you've got people on Twitter telling you how good you are, you have, you know, you're hearing it from just about everyone. Your own head coach was on Jim Rome last week. He was on, you know, Paul Feinbaum's show. He did ESPN's Game Day, you know, a little hit there. It's tough to kind of, like, you know, keep your focus on the fact that you've got a task at hand. I think that Cincinnati, they may have been a little overlooked. I think what really hurt them more than anything defensively was I felt like the third down conversions, that's something they were like one of the tops in the country was. They really didn't let teams convert third downs. There was like 21% going into that game. But they allowed Cincinnati to go 9-15, and that's way too high. I think that was the most going into that game. And when you allow teams to do that, that extends drives and eventually lets teams find room to put some points on the board. I don't think that's going to be the case this week. This is a week that, you know, Scott Frost started things out by basically saying, I told my players, you know, look at Iowa State. Look what happened last week. You know, Iowa State was a 30-point underdog against Oklahoma, and they beat them. You know, Oklahoma thought it was going to be easy, and it wasn't. So, I think Scott Frost's coaching staff definitely have the right mentality. It's whether or not they can convince the players to keep buying into it. From what everyone I've spoken with, they feel like that's, you know, there's no letdown. They're still continuing to do it. They still haven't offensively. You and I talked a little about this. They haven't hit that brick wall a little bit yet, and I don't think they'll get it against East Carolina. But again, I still think they'll bounce back. I still think they'll be they should, you know, really not have a letdown going into this week.
If the offense hits a wall against East Carolina, it'll be the first one to hit a wall against East Carolina this year. The lowest amount of points they've given up in a game is 34 points. James Madison scored 34 points on them. West Virginia scored 56. Virginia Tech scored 64. UConn, the only team East Carolina beat, still scored 38 on them. They're giving up almost 600 yards a game, almost 300 yards rushing a game. This is not a good defense. It is one that you would think that this UCF offense, which has looked so good, in part because of Mackenzie Milton, in part because of guys like Traquan Smith who have developed. But you look at the East Carolina defense and you think, oh, you got, after watching UCF against Cincinnati, you have to think there has to be at least coaching staff salivating a little bit that they might be able to continue that run and maybe not have the punter punt again. I mean, but this is an East Carolina defense that is, it's not that good. You would think the offense would continue looking as well as they have all year.
Yeah, this should be. I think to me, the key on all those things you just mentioned is the offensive line. The offensive line has been the best unit on this team. People argue, what about Mackenzie Milton? What about receivers? What about? No, offensive line has been the best unit on this team. And I'll tell you why. Because last year they struggled, especially late in the season. They gave up a lot of sacks. They weren't able to get the running game going. We're not seeing that this year. They've given up one sack in the first four games. Mackenzie Milton's had plenty of time to find receivers. Not that he takes more than 4 seconds to find a guy downfield. I think the running game has been good. They've been using a lot of sweeps. They've been doing different players. I mean, think about this, Brent. The number of playmakers that UCF has on offense that most teams have one or two. I mean, look at what UCF has. They got Traquan Smith. You know, you got Taj McGowan. You got Adrian Killings. You got Otis Anderson. You got Marlon Williams, who had his first carry of the season for 47 yards. They've got, you know, Dredrick Snelson. I mean, there's guys all over up and down this field. Guys who haven't even seen the field. Emmanuel Green didn't even, like, touch the ball against Cincinnati. I mean, there are guys right now who they have so many options that if I'm a defensive coordinator, I don't know what to do. You know, I mean, who do I focus on? Who do I try to stop? Who do I try to eliminate? It's hard to do that. I think the only thing that, as long as UCF can continue to protect Milton and they can continue to allow him time to find, you know, the receivers, I just don't see how you could slow this offense down. Now, if someone is able to get to Milton and you force him to second guess, because one of the things that he did a lot last year that was kind of detrimental is he couldn't find someone open right away. He would go to his read, the one or two or three person, and then he would just start running. And he hasn't done that this year. A lot of the runs he's made have been very dedicated quarterback runs. So I think that's what is a defense. If you want to make sure that – if you know things are going bad for the offense, let's put it this way, it's when Mackenzie Milton is trying to scramble for his life because he feels like there's nothing out there. I don't think that's been the case.
And a guy I mentioned, and you mentioned, Traquan Smith, having a target like that makes everything also easier as a quarterback. When you have a guy that can break a game open, that it can be your safety valve, whatever, to have that guy that he is – seemingly has developed that connection with, that makes it a lot easier from the quarterback position to knowing you always have a guy like him you can go to.
Yeah, I talked to Traquan this afternoon after practice, and he gave me that line where they've got this great chemistry. He said, I can sometimes just give him a look, you know, that look where, and he knows exactly what that means. That's when you really see that chemistry, the bond these two guys have had. They've had it the last 2 years. You know, Smith had a great performance against Cincinnati. I will say this, he just was added to the Biletnikoff Award that's given annually to the top wide receiver in the country. I will say this, that teams will start focusing on him. The teams will try to, but he's smart, he knows that, and he knows that they'll try to double team him at times. And I think what they'll try to do is that allows some of the other guys to step up and make plays. We didn't even mention Jordan Akins or Jordan Franks and the tight ends who were, you know, still major pieces as well. So, again, so much going on. I think Smith's performance has been great. We saw what he did against Cincinnati. He's going to have, you know, again, I think you'll see more from that as well, even if it's a decoy position. But this offense is just, I don't think I've watched a game, and I'm not blowing smoke, that I don't think I've seen a game where a team does 8 possessions and didn't look at all like they struggled in any one of the 8 possessions. They kicked a field goal in the one, and that was maybe the closest thing. But even then, I think it was because of penalties that hurt them. That team could have gone, if they had gone on to the fourth quarter, they would have easily had over 650 yards in that game.
Now, I know the coaching adage, the player's adage, is one game at a time. We don't need to worry about that because we do a podcast.
And no one from UCF is listening.
And no one's listening. If you play for UCF and you're listening, if you're coaching staff, you can go ahead and click stop now because we are moving our focus beyond this game. And I know we're not doing one game at a time. But, Matt, now I do bowl projections for the Orlando Sentinel, and I've been doing them for years now, and I still have USF in the group of five being in the New Year's Day Six Bowl, and I had some UCF fans comment on that and didn't feel that as accurate, and I base them on not opinion, not feeling, based on just the numbers that are out there, and USF is still the team that is ranked higher, and they will probably be favored maybe by a half a point right now against UCF. But looking at this UCF schedule, we can start doing this now, again, because we have a podcast, but beyond East Carolina, a very tough game at Navy, and then you have some winnable games leading up to that USF game, but there's those two games that kind of stand out, and if they get through those, the East Carolinas and the Temples, those games get bigger and bigger. You're going to Annapolis. That game, it looms large. How do you see this kind of playing out for this team as the season goes on, as they've been playing so far?
Well, next week to me is their first biggest challenge, because big challenge, let's put it that way. Because I feel like, again, playing against a Navy team that does triple option, it's a ranked opponent. As long as Navy wins this weekend, you know, they'll be ranked when they go in that game. It's always tough to play against the triple option. And you know, UCF's a 3-4 style defense. And when you play against a triple option, you have to bring, when you're in a 3-4, you have to bring a lot of your linebackers up. You're going to have to bring some of your safeties up to contain. They don't want to let guys get on the outside. It's going to be tough, you know, and I think that'll be the challenge defensively to be able to do that. You almost have to put in a whole new defensive plan when you're playing against Navy. To me, that's a challenge. I think another game that no one's talking about is this Temple game. I know Temple's bad, but this is a, UCF's going to have to go up to Philadelphia in a couple weeks. It's going to be colder. UCF's traditionally not done well in cold weather. And they're going to play against a Temple team that's still a tough team. It's still a team that wants to play tough. And is, again, as you continue to climb the rankings, these other teams look at this game as their Super Bowl. So you have to go up to Temple on the road and play a team that's probably going to, in a hostile crowd. We know Philadelphians aren't going to, you know, be kind in this game. So it's probably going to be a difficult game for them. So those are the two games right now that I'm circling as, like, these are the challenges to me that I think that they've got to get through. If they get through those two.
And it sets up.
It's that USF game that, again, we talked about. And I know you talked about with the bowl rankings. I want to address that a little bit. I mean, part of the problem is, and it's unfortunate, is the American doesn't have great bowl tie-ins. You know, if you get, you know, you look at the situation, there's the Boca Bowl down in Miami. You know, I don't necessarily believe that, you know, UCF, if they go to Boca, I don't know if that's being a high attractive game for them. There's the Birmingham Bowl, which might be attractive in the sense of, and you and I have talked about this before, it could be an SEC team you're playing. So maybe that gives you a little
Could be the Gators.
Could be the Gators. I mean, think about that. That would, I'm sure UCF fans would take that. But there's Birmingham. Then there's Hawaii. I mean, that's an attractive game in the sense of, you know, maybe not so much for fans locally, but you want to maybe take that trip during Christmas time. It's an exotic trip. You get a chance to do, I'm sure, boosters and donors, and I'm sure Danny White will be getting all his, you know, people out there. It would be, couldn't be an opportunity. Think about Mackenzie Milton. Had a chance to play in front of his home crowd, really. He's from Hawaii. So there would be an opportunity there. That's why this Group of Five New Year's Six game is so critical, because you think about it. I mean, you're talking the Peach Bowl more than likely. So this is a huge deal. And right now, when you look at the standings, again, these are AP, not the playoff ones, you're looking at three American teams. And so that's why right now it looks good for the Americans. So one of these three teams might end up making it there. But again, they're all going to have to end up at some point playing each other, it looks like.
And I'm going to add one more game to the one in the circle, and that SMU game that is going to be coming off the Austin Peay week. They're going to go on the road. To me, a big part of that depends on when that game kicks off, because if that's one of those 11 o'clock cold kickoffs in an empty stadium, that's a game that sometimes can trip up any team to play in front of a sparse crowd and a quiet.
And it really shouldn't be, because SMU's 4-1. And SMU could be bowl eligible.
But it's still if it's 11 o'clock game, it's a sparse crowd if it's cold. But I think the SMU game is probably one, as the season goes on, if they keep winning, will loom interesting to me as one of the games really to watch, because it does have those intangibles that we don't know at the time. We don't know the weather. We don't know the kickoff time. We don't know how SMU fans will be reacting to their team. But I just wanted to add that as one of the ones I see.
That's a good one, because Chad Morris, I spoke with him at the American during the preseason, the American Media Days, and he talked about this is the year. He felt like this was the year that SMU could really make a big push, could really become an elite program. I think now we're seeing that grid start for them. But again, if they're 6-1, 7-1, and they're looking at their opportunity for a good bowl game, that UCF game becomes even larger, especially if UCF somehow merges its way into the top teens, you know, 18, 19, 20. I think then all of a sudden that becomes, again, like a Super Bowl. Everyone, for right now, this is their Super Bowl, because they're playing a team that's ranked in the top 22 right now.
And we can go back to East Carolina, so everybody can stop looking ahead. But I felt like this was a good time to do that because I'm starting to get notes, and you're seeing fans' reaction, and I think they're starting to see that this team is for real and can be in contention for this. Whether or not they end up being that, the group of five representatives, still there's a lot of football to be played, to be seen, but the fact that they can be in that discussion, the fact that we can look ahead at the schedule and kind of discuss these things is a welcome change from two seasons ago, so we'll take that. But it is East Carolina this week, and we will come at you again after to talk about it. But UCF has to get the job done at home. As you said, it's a Super Bowl, if you will, for East Carolina. It's a game they are still trying to find their identity. They've won two of their last 15 games. Their defense is bad, but they do have some offensive weapons. You always have to be careful in any of these games, and if you aren't, just ask Oklahoma.
Yes, and I mean, again, and I think what needs to happen, too, and we talk about this every week in and week out, fans need to show up. I mean, you know, this is homecoming weekend. This is an opportunity to really kind of, you know, UCF's breaking out these special Space Ghost, what are they, space uniforms, whatever they are.
Everybody's,
you know,
got a special uniform.
Yes, everyone has special uniforms. You know, I think this is an opportunity, really, a nice home crowd, you know, really kind of getting into it, I think would give a big boost for them. I know East Carolina's struggling, but again, this is a chance to see a team that's coming off, you know, like I said, that Cincinnati game was as clean as a game as you'll see. I think Scott Frost said afterwards he's never seen a cleaner offensive game. And this is coming from a guy who was the offensive coordinator at Oregon. So think about when he's... They've had a few of those. So, I mean, so to me, this was a big thing. And I think, you know, again, this is an opportunity, even though they may blow this team out by 40 or 50 points, you still want to be there and show the support.
Be there for any other reason than if you're watching at home, you may get stuck behind a 7 OT game and miss the first two touchdowns.
I forgot about that. That's right. I'm going to tell you what, fans, and I know this is kind of like a little behind the scenes, inside baseball. You're watching the 7 overtime game, and UCF scores 13 points in the first minute something. So by the time that game gets over, you turn it on, you're already down 13-0 to see what happens. That's what we mean about high scoring offense. It was pretty funny to see. I know, I'm sure it wasn't funny for fans who wanted to watch every little bit of it.
But if you're at the stadium Saturday, you don't need to worry about that.
Hopefully the weather will hold
up. Then you can watch.
There's been some concern the weather. You know, there could be some rain.
Oh, stop bringing it down. It's going to be great. It's going to be wonderful.
Mother Nature does not like
Mother
UCF
Nature
for
is not
some
like this
reason.
UCF team. We'll talk to you again after the East Carolina game. Subscribe to the podcast and follow all of our coverage at OrlandoSentinel.com.
Thank you for listening to UCF Knights Talk, your podcast home for the latest on the UCF Knights. For more UCF coverage, visit OrlandoSentinel.com. Subscribe to this podcast, share it on social media, and review it on iTunes.